Welcome to the Best Science Medicine Podcast, BS without the BS.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 347th episode of the Best Science Medicine Podcast. My name is James McCormack, and I am a professor with the Faculty of Pharmaceutical Sciences at the University of British Columbia in lovely Vancouver, where we've had an entire day of no rain. Yeah, last 4 years.
I'm Mike Allen. I'm a family doctor and a professor at the University of Alberta. And today, in the luxurious Edmonton studios, we have Dr. Mike Kolber. And Mike, you've just a recent graduate, eh, from med school?
I went back. They figured out I wasn't good enough, so they sent me back again. And yeah, so I'm really happy to walk down the hall last week, and I'm really pumped. Happy to be here.
Yeah. And you know, we had to get Mike in, you know, and he does need to be a doctor because of the topic.
For the topic, right. Right. It's about chewing gum. So Mike is going to talk to us about a couple of tools for practice over the next few podcasts. And today's is one near and dear to our heart, and that is being able to fart sooner. I think it's...
We have a lot of fun at the office, and yes.
So, Mike, this topic is one that we've been debating at the office for a long time doing, because it is just such a... We love these ideas of a simple concept to improve care. And one of our med students, we get emails from very keen med students, and I think it was Jennifer Ng, is that right?
Yeah, correct.
Emailed us and was keen, and we I think you work with her on this for a little while, and so jump in and tell us about the topic and etc.
For sure. And it's lovely to try and find something simple that really can be generalized across many, whether it be developing or developed countries. And I think this is one that transcends that. And it's lovely to see something that's actually positive. We'll go through the evidence. So yeah, we were interested. We'd heard smatterings about, hey, have you heard about chewing gum after surgery? And you know, there's evidence that comes and goes about chewing gum, whether it be related to a no FODMAP diet and trying to get rid of that stuff, or related to peppermint for IBS in the UK and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, we thought, man, maybe there's something here. So you're right. This was one that we originally started with residents, and residents get sidetracked, and we had this very keen med student to look at chewing gum. So we wanted to see, does chewing gum improve kind of bowel function after surgery, whether it be an intra-abdominal surgery? And so there is a lot of evidence on this. Contrary to popular belief, there's a Cochrane review that looked at 81 randomized control trials, and you go, come on, took us that long to figure this one out. It's maybe one of these ones where it says, I know the evidence isn't great, but enough already. Mm-hmm. And so there's almost 10,000 patients. And basically the bottom line is chewing gum did result in a decrease in time to first flatus by about half a day, time to first bowel motion by also about a half a day, and length of stay. Again, just about three quarters of a day. So you may want to take a step back and go, ah, come on. But I think this is really challenging. You know, in the old days where you'd have your intra-abdominal surgery, you'd wait a day, you'd see how you go, and then you'd give something a little bit and just – oh, yeah, so this is an easy way, I think, of moving things forward.
Literally moving
things forward. Yeah, literally moving things forward. Well done. These are all small studies. You bet. Some of them, we had to put some parameters on them because there were so many studies. We wanted to see which ones would rise from the ashes or from the 81. And so we wanted to look at ones that are a little bit larger, ones that were done in a setting that was run properly, and just higher quality. And when we looked at the stuff, there are some studies that actually did rise forward. A couple other things that really important, actually subsetted out colorectal surgery, gynecological surgery like C-sections, and then other surgeries like gallbladders. And so not surprisingly, the colorectal surgeries actually had a little more, the evidence was a bit stronger as far as the times. And you'd say, well, C-section, you're home in a day anyway. So again, it's really hard to really show a difference that way. So this was something that was really positive. So then we also looked at some of the other studies and followed forward, and there was a really decent RCT that was done after the systematic review was published. So this was 112 Dutch patients, colorectal surgery, randomized to chewing gum or a patch. And basically they found bowel motion within the first 3 days was improved by from 57% to 85%, so never needed to chew to four. So for every four people on chewing gum, an additional one will have a bowel motion in 3 days. And ileus, and how they define ileus at day five, number needed to treat, again, about five. So again, this was a really great randomized control trial, really showing a benefit again. When we looked at it a bit further, we said, okay, wait a minute. So old school is like we talked about before, you have surgery, you wait for a day, you have a little bit of sips of fluids, you know, you kind of move. And you know how every abdominal surgery, you're in there for about a week.
Yeah.
So there's something called this ERAS program. So enhanced recovery after surgery, and basically it's kind of fast forwarding and moving things forward, whether it be early feeding, movement, VTE prophylaxis, just all kind of these things. And so we wanted to see, well, does chewing gum make a difference in addition to the ERAS, or is this just kind of the whole synopsis or kind of thought of, let's just move these people forward and just kind of, this is one way of moving them forward. So we actually looked at this, whether it made a difference with the ERAS. And unfortunately, so there was a really great study, high quality, largest study, actually had about 75% of the patients that were actually in this ERAS subgroup. And unfortunately, their outcomes were in days, not hours. And so it's one of those things where if you're saying, how did you do last year? Well, it's like you can't measure in years or weeks or months. And unfortunately, this was measured in days and not hours. And I think that's probably the reason why this one really didn't find a statistically significant benefit. When you contacted the authors, they said, you're right. We should have done this in a different measurement tool in hours, not days. So I still think it doesn't change our bottom line. We think chewing gum is beneficial. And we think, however, we think probably chewing gum in addition to ERAS, all this other stuff, is probably less beneficial. But if you have so maybe you're in a developing country and you don't have the ability to do all these other things, this might be something easy, simple, cheap to move things forward and help improve the efficiency of your hospital, but more importantly, improve the post-operative care of your patients.
These guys, it did still work, even though it would be harder to show a benefit in C-section. It still showed a benefit in them. Going to the first flatulence, the first bowel movement were all, you know, 7-9 hours earlier. Yep. and that kind of thing. And so it's and even length of stay was down. So we kind of, you know, well, 0.7 of a day, what difference does that make? Well, that's about $700.
I think that's a big difference. You know what? When you multiply that over our system, I don't know how many other things there are, again, ERAS notwithstanding, that would actually move these things, that kind of move those kind of numbers.
You know, for a pack of Hubba Bubba.
Yeah, for a pack of Hubba Bubba. So did they use Hubba Bubba? Their gums were all over the place. Some of them had sugar. Some didn't have sugar. Some of the studies were blinded, meaning the clinicians weren't aware. Some of them, they were aware. If your clinicians were aware, the outcome people weren't aware. So they did the best they can that way.
Yeah, and basically, you couldn't blind patients to this.
No, you could not blind patients to this. Yeah, it'd be a little challenging. That's not really gum. That's
Starburst.
My coffee cup. Yeah, that's my coffee cup that doesn't taste so well.
Yeah, or they could have, you know, they could have done chewing tobacco.
Oh,
there
nice.
You go. Yeah, might have got a hard time getting that one past ethics.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
We're really not sure.
James, did you want to, I think you wanted to segue into some pharmacokinetics of chewing gum now?
Oh, of course. Well, because there is a, you know, the half-life of chewing gum.
This should be riveting.
Well, it's the flavor. I don't know about you, but the flavor, the half life is about 3 minutes. The flavor
depends
disappears.
On your gum. Yeah, the old gum you bought in your baseball card and hockey card packs, those had a half life of around 3 to 4 seconds.
Yeah, and they chipped your tooth.
So
but with this sort of stuff, and again, this is, I mean, you guys know, deal a lot more with people like this than I ever would, given my profession. But because some of the key things for getting people out of hospital is that they have to have that first bowel movement and so on and so forth. That's the criteria that are used to get people out of hospital, right?
Certainly one of the things you'd look at, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, even if they were going to the bathroom, James, but they had a rip-roaring infection, probably would send them home.
Oh, no.
I just wanted to fill in that detail for you.
Oh, well, thank you. So what you just told me is in a patient who is in sepsis, they don't send them home, eh?
Yeah.
Huh.
I can take a moment and you can write that down.
Thank God for you, Mike, and this podcast. I learn something every day.
That's what I'm here for, buddy.
Yeah. And so how is this sort of like, what's the approach? Like, how do they do this?
So, you know, they often, some of these studies started having chewing gum right before, but most of them started a couple number of hours after. So you wake up, you're in the post-op recovery, or you're back to your room, and they just start giving it a few hours after, and probably 2 or 3 times a day. I don't think there's a magic formula, and games are all over the place. I think it's just a matter of, hey, you know what? This is something that and we're not going to know how or why and why this stuff works. But, yeah, so it's just a few hours after and whatever you have is probably reasonable. Mm-hmm. I don't think it has to be specific.
Yeah. Any gum and almost any time once they're kind of out of that post immediate post-op phase, right? I think you don't want to get someone who's groggy.
Have you seen much of this, you know, implemented at all? Because it means it seems to me like even though we're laughing at the beginning that, you know, there's 81 studies in 9,000 patients. Now, that doesn't mean there's a lot of people in each of the studies, but you'd have thought that this would be a very simple thing, but maybe there's no, you know, there's no one to really push this. I mean, is it, you know, what is it, the gum company that should be, you know, putting up ads and stuff to do this, or?
You know, and I think this is one of the reasons why we do these, James. I do hear that, and I haven't verified this, I do hear that actually we are using that in one of our larger, busier surgical centers in Northern Alberta, and just wow, all right, interesting. Cool. And very cool. So I think some of these guys do get it, and I think this is one of the pieces of the puzzle. Maybe one of these things that I don't want to use the Mickey Mouse word, but I wonder if other people just say, oh, come on, you know, like
it can't
be that simple, and it can't be that
easy.
And I'm looking at and because the studies were smaller and stuff, we don't think I'd kind of go the other side and say, man, this is something cheap and relatively easy to implement, and I think this could make a difference in our people.
And I can't see too many patients balking at it either. What kind of drugs are you putting into me? Those kind of things. Like,
absolutely.
This is such a simple little intervention. And we were very interested in the team when Mike started working on this about could this be a solution for other types of constipation trouble, having bowel movements. But unfortunately, Mike, I don't think that was looked at.
We actually did do a search and we couldn't find anything for idiopathic constipation. So really it's been targeted this way, but maybe that's a way of – that's what we need to look at in the future.
Future study,
you betcha. You bet. Yeah. So it's one of these things – go ahead there, James.
No, go ahead. I just think it's kind of cool that, like you said, it's a very simple approach. But, you know, you'd have to set it up, you know, to you know, within the clinical setting in a hospital. You know, you'd have to go through like 37 committees.
Including the dreaded forms committee. I suspect it must be a special form for the type of chewing gum, and you all know how the forms committee goes.
I remember reading some stuff, it's sort of a similar stuff where they, you know, we've talked about this in the past where, you know, how should you insert suppositories? Do you insert them, you know, with the tapered end or the other end? Yeah. And there's not a lot of data. There's certainly not 81 randomized controlled trials, but I know there was a group that tried to in England to try to set it up so that they changed the direction of how you inserted suppositories, and they basically said we would have to, you know, basically create a national guideline to allow healthcare providers to insert a suppository in the opposite direction, and it would be, you could imagine the discussion that would go on about this at almost any hospital. And you know, then, you know, is it juicy fruit, should it be?
Oh, for sure. You know, all of that. What were the flavors of it? What types of gum are they? Yeah. How long do they chew it for?
Yeah. And where do they spit it out?
We don't want to find this underneath the tray for the food tray at the hospital. Blah, blah, blah.
How about this? Does it go on the MAR?
There you go. But it's one of those things, in all seriousness, the chicken or the egg, right? So you'll get the traditional. Remember, things take a generation to change in medicine. So if you're a senior physician, senior healthcare provider that said, no, the way that it goes is you wait for the bowel sounds, and then you give them a little bit more, and then they have a fart, and you give them a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And again, what came first, the chicken or the egg? And I think that maybe it may be challenging to implement if you have some of those fixed beliefs that you have to go A to B to C, and that they should be in the hospital for 7 days minimum after. So I think that I would encourage any listeners to give it a try, and if they actually have some successes, to please let me know, or some challenges implementing it. But we make fun of how challenging things are, but you have to pick your battles, and I think this might be one that if you have a smaller facility that you're able to move it forward, and it may make a difference. I look at my hospital in Peace River and how busy it is, and you know, if you could try and get some of these. We don't do a lot of intra-abdominal surgeries in Peace River. However, C-sections, and we obviously receive them back from other places, and maybe this is something that we continue to try and look at and move forward.
You know, if I was to sort of having a look at this and thinking about how you'd implement it, probably the easiest way to implement it would be for any people who are doing surgery, whatever, to just say, you know, to the patient, you know, when you come in, bring a package of gum.
Yeah,
and start chewing it, because I'm almost sure no one's gonna you know, confiscate gum from the person. And you might want to say, you know, it would take us 3 years to get this through any sort of protocol process. But why don't you just bring in, the gum that you like, and, you know, once you wake up and start chewing it, and just go from there. That might be the easiest way to implement it.
It would be the easiest way, because everything else is, you're right, it's laborious to change anything in a hospital setting.
Yeah, no, exactly. And there's no gum regulations as far as I know.
Yeah, and no one's taking anyone out to dinner, you know, or bringing lunches to the hospital and having off service on them and stuff.
I could discuss the bioequivalence of gum.
Oh, good.
Lovely. Yeah. That'd be great.
Well, that's a whole other podcast, so why don't we not go there?
We'll do that on the next one.
Yeah.
No, that's cool. Everyone will be excited about that.
Yeah. And so, you know, what you're saying, we talk about numbers needed to treat of, you know, 4 or 5 or for some of these outcomes. So that's pretty good. So that's cool stuff. And I'm so glad that you took it on, Mike, to do this evaluation, because I wouldn't have wanted to.
Actually, it was more enjoyable than you actually anticipated.
I imagine. It works.
It was actually really enjoyable.
Oh, God, yeah. You think about how many things we look at in the evidence world that don't work. This was one that actually worked, so
yeah.
It was
cool. No, that's great. So let's just give I hesitate to say the bottom line on this one. So just give the Coles Notes version of this, and then I think we'll call it a day, even though it's a pretty short podcast. You can't get any better than this.
Sure. Yeah, guys, so chewing gum in post-abdominal surgery patients really shortens time to first flatus, which is a reasonable outcome, by about 10 hours, time to first bowel motion by half a day, and length of hospital stay by about 3/4 a day. Works a little bit better for colorectal surgery, so actually manipulating the colon as opposed to a gynecological surgery or other surgeries like gallbladder stuff. And for every 5 patients treated, 1 fewer will have an ileus. So, you know, we think there's some good evidence that way, post-operative surgery. It'd be lovely in the future if we actually saw whether this helped for idiopathic constipation. As we know, sometimes it's kind of challenging and trying, and maybe that's something to look in the future.
Cool. So I think we'll leave it at that. I don't know if we have anything to sell other than please continue to go look at all of the tools for practice that these guys are doing. I think there's been a few that have been put out in the last few weeks, I think, because Mike, you've been away, but I think when you're away, they actually get some work done.
Yeah, when I leave them alone, they can get some work done, finally. So, yeah, they've been churned out every 2 weeks still. We haven't had a hiatus. We take a brief hiatus in the summer every year. But they're coming out. There's just one on CBC screening. Well, that'll come out. We'll discuss that soon. And then a couple others from Mike, too, which we'll discuss.
Yeah. So and what I can do is, I just to start the announcement, we are Best Science Medicine course next year in Vancouver, April 2018. Sorry, not April 2018. In 2018 is actually going to be in May 4-5. So So we've already got a date set for that.
What about the rain?
The rain will be there. Yeah, the rain in Spain falls mainly in the plain.
And if you don't want to wait that long, the PIPE conference.
Do you have dates for that?
October 21, 2021.
Nice.
In 2017 at the lovely DoubleTree Hotel in West Edmonton.
Awesome.
Right.
For those small people, it's not that far away from the mall.
Yeah. So
you can go on a water slide.
You can go on a water slide.
And I think we really shouldn't say anything more. So I think we'll leave it at that. So thanks as always for listening.
Talk to you later.
So long for now.